This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a nonprofit with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Change menus, change lives. Learn more at chefscollaborative.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to The Line here on Heritage Radio. I'm your host, Eli Sussman, co-owner and co-chef of Samisa Restaurant in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. If you've never caught the show before, I spend each episode with a single guest asking about their career, the trajectory of their career, their childhood, how they reach the point that we meet them at today. I'm a very young restaurateur. Samisa has not been open for very long, and I'm excited to have someone here on the show today with a ton of experience, so I'm going to ask him a ton of questions and really mine into the history of his restaurateur career in New York City. Today on the show is Mark Meyer. He is a chef and restaurateur of several locations in New York. Along with his partner, Vicky Freeman, they own Cook Shop, Vic's, 100 Acres, and Rosie's. He's worked on both coasts. He's been a strong proponent of the green market well before it was cool and fashionable to do so. Mark, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure and an honor. Thank you.
So I want to start at when you opened up your first restaurant. We'll go back to your early cooking career when you were getting started. But I want to know, what was the first restaurant that you opened in New York that was yours?
Well, that was Five Points on Great Jones Street, which is where Vic's is right now.
And so what was that feeling like? You had been in the kitchen for many years as a chef. You'd been on the line. You'd worked on the West Coast. Right. Take us through what that feeling is like when you are standing in Five Points the day that you're going to open up for service.
I think it was sheer terror. I didn't feel, honestly, that I was ready for it, looking back at it anyway. I question constantly whether I had really prepared myself adequately, that I had thought through everything, that I had worked on the menu adequately. I mean, since you're asking this of me now, this is what's going through my mind. And, it was something that I still have doubts about.
What type of spot was Five Points? Was it a big restaurant? What did it look like?
Well, it had been a trucking garage. I think it was originally a stable from the 19th century. So it was about 90 seats at the time it was beautifully done. I thought we really tried to work on being as thorough as we could with components and air conditioning and fixing the floors, and it had been gutted and ripped out from sub-basement to ceiling. So taking that kind of approach, I thought it was fairly well done.
What spoke to you about the space, if anything? I know that when people are looking for their own space for their first project, did you scour the city? Did you stumble upon it? Did a friend put you on to the space? Like, how did Five Points become the first restaurant space for you?
Well, we knew a contractor who had done number of renovations, who had an office upstairs, and so there was some scouring, as you put it, but basically we had settled on this building. The tenant who is our landlord was in the trucking business. He supplied inks and paper for the printing business that existed in Soho at the time. So he trucked around the city and brought paper goods and ink for a big publishing and printing business that existed. And that was beginning to die. And so his trucking business wasn't feasible any longer.
So you open up Five Points, and how long did Five Points exist in that location in its incarnation?
From 1999 until 2014.
And in 2014, you did something that I imagine was difficult to do, which is you closed Five Points and you rebranded it. You reopened it as a different restaurant with a different vibe, with a different interior, and with a different chef at the helm. I would love for you to speak about what does that feel like to close your first restaurant. Obviously, you had quite a bit of success there. It was open for 16 years, and by the time you closed it, you had other restaurants in your group. So I don't think anyone would say that you were truly, really suffering from a restaurateur standpoint, but how does that feel to close the doors on Five Point for the very last time in 2014?
Well, I've been asked that before, and honestly, it was... There was no mourning at all that took place. I think it had run its course. I think it was very apparent that it was, from a business standpoint and emotionally, it was time to move on.
But that's a very interesting perspective coming from someone who you traditionally chefs as a. Is an ego-driven position. It is my way is the best way, and if people don't like it, damn them, because I know what's right. But you made a decision that was really based more on business and on sheer going in the direction of just the change needed to happen, so you figured out a way with your partner to make it happen. I'm curious, is that something that you think... Did you gain that perspective with 16 years of success?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't always success. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the qualifying thing. I think we were seeing business level drop, honestly. And I looked at it more of trying to make, reincarnate. If you will, that there was another life there, that there was a way of not just the rebranding it or anything of that sort, but there was a way to take Five Points and recreate it and make it another life out of it.
And so, what did this new life of Five Points become?
Well, it's Vic's.
Mm-hmm.
We're very intent on making the place look completely different, and brightening it up and making it more contemporary and more appealing. And it was what Five Points I felt always should have been or could have been.
What do you mean by that?
Well, as I said, That standing there at first and realizing with Five Points that it worked, we had a great time with it, but it wasn't quite. I didn't really feel that it was fully what it could have been. And Vic's is in that I think it should have been more Mediterranean. I wanted more pastas. I wanted to do pizzas. The oven that I had at the time wasn't adequate. I think I was distracted too with the other projects that I had gotten involved in. So there wasn't that real force and life, and this is what it needed.
You perfectly led me to my next question, which is how did you manage multiple locations? You were in the kitchen and then you opened up a second, and then you opened up a third. I'm curious if you can walk us through sort of what was that transition point when you went from one restaurant to two? How did you spend your days either in the kitchen or more on the ownership business side? What took more of your focus when you went from one location to two locations?
Well, I think at that point you definitely need to have more capable people working with you, working for you, working alongside of you. And again, you're bringing up these things that I have to question about myself and about my approach, because it's not as though it was codified and I had a plan. It was really jumping in and hoping things would work. So I don't know. Am I answering your question?
Sure. Yeah. I'm curious. So, you know, what was a normal day like? You know, did you start at one restaurant and jump back and forth between the two? Did you hire a CDC at both locations so that you could act as the executive chef at both locations? How did the logistics work from a cooking standpoint?
I think, as you describe, it was starting at one place, trying to review menus, making the effort to review menus, looking at what was going on, going to the next place. You know, eventually we started using Dropbox and reviewing menus just, you know, online. It was a back and forth.
Was it fun or was it exhausting?
You know, it wasn't exhausting. I think, again, in retrospect, I should have made the effort to try to have more fun at it. But it was, you know, it was a critical. It was trying to evaluate, trying to be critical, trying to encourage, you know, trying to make sure the places were representing what they needed to be. Making all the efforts to source, making sure the ingredients were what I wanted, you know, discussing things with the chefs, with the staff, and just really trying to, again, make sure that this idea and this approach to cooking was being conveyed adequately and was being represented in the respective restaurants.
It's definitely been written about and covered, and you've talked about your love of the market, and that is definitely an approach that permeates throughout your restaurants. How do you distill that down into your staff, into your chefs, and into your front of house? How do you make it clear that those are the type of restaurants that you work in and that you run? What's the Mark Meyer ethos that surrounds the restaurants that you run?
Where do I start? Well, I think right now it's very clear at this point how to do that or what it's about. But I think it's been a process of ongoing discussions and clearly what's on the plate in many cases speaks for what we're about. But I think it's talking about support for local farms. I think it's discussions about what is commodity meat and what that is about, as opposed to, you know, bringing in whole animals, which is what we do, what the effects of industrial farming are, as opposed to supporting independent small farmers in regions. So, you know, you try to introduce things. You talk about the health benefits. We talk about the rise in uterine cancer or breast cancer. We talk about early onset of menstruation in young women, as it relates to the high levels of antibiotics, or it can be done very pointedly in that manner, or it can be talked about in just discussing where the lamb's coming from. So there's been a range of information, and I try not to be a demagogue about it, but talk about it as in terms of practical approach to business too.
Now there's tons of ways to acquire information on the topics that you've just talked about. You can do a lot of quick internet research, and it's something that's been in the last decade covered a lot more. What informed your thoughts on this early on in your career? Was there a specific restaurant or perhaps a chef that was that imparted some of this wisdom to you that you carried on? Perhaps it was time that you spent overseas cooking somewhere. I'm just curious, sort of, where did you learn all this stuff that you're now imparting onward in your own restaurants?
Well, I think initially it was just seeing the beauty of ingredients, the beauty of things in the green market, or working in Italy and going to a market and buying things for that evening and going back the next day, and those things weren't there. Those beautiful long-stemmed artichokes or what have you weren't around. So it was a different dish the next day. I think if there was any one individual, though, it may have been in discussions and over coffee with Peter Hoffman, too, who I still consider one of the trailblazers.
For those that don't know, can you go into a little more depth about who Peter Hoffman is?
Well, Peter had a restaurant called Savoy, and then it became Back 40, and he had one of those cargo bikes years ago, and would go and you would see him buying his eggs and apples and everything else that he needed, and riding back. And it wasn't just because it was there, but there was an ethic about why, and I think that was very beneficial for me. Those discussions with Peter.
Are you still going to the market these days? Who's going to the market for your restaurants?
Well, everybody does.
Okay.
I mean, when the market is really exploding, I get a zip van, mm-hmm. as I mentioned to you earlier,
yeah.
and we pick up a couple times a week. Otherwise, it's it's car service or taxis or that sort of thing. But we'll load a van.
And so let's talk about how decisions are made with menus at the restaurant, and a little bit deeper relative to the market. Obviously, we're in New York. It's really cold today. It's been pretty nasty for a couple weeks now. I don't think there's the most amazing produce and fruit and vegetables at the market right now. How do the restaurants make those type of decisions in a New York climate, in a weather climate?
Well, I always preface that with the fact that here I am setting these standards, and it's very easy to become a complete hypocrite, right? In trying to do that here in the Northeast in February. There is a fantastic co-op in eastern Pennsylvania that sellers a lot of things and has some greenhouses beyond potatoes and root vegetables, carrots and turnips and parsnips, rutabagas, kohlrabis, that sort of thing. And onions. It's difficult.
Mm-hmm. So when you're going into a menu development session with your chefs. How often are you having direct input into menus these days? I know that we can talk about some of the specific chefs at your restaurants, but I am just really curious because as a restaurateur, you lived a full, very full life and career as a chef. And I want to know sort of how hands-on are you still with the menu creation of your restaurants?
Well, with Vic's and 100 Acres, the individual chefs write those menus. Mm-hmm. They're extremely capable, smart, talented individuals. It's so important to respect that and show the respect for their approach to cooking. The way I would get involved is if I see redundancy in ingredients, or that I ask, well, where is this coming from, or what's your decision making on using something? Menu balance, wording, composition, there'll be a discussion. Otherwise, it has to be their menus. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a point in having them in the kitchen.
You spend a lot of time still at Cook Shop, correct?
I spend a lot of time at Cook Shop, yes. And
how long has Cook Shop been open?
Where are we now? 12, going on 12 years, I guess. 11 and a half years.
How does that feel? Do you feel like there's a safety in Cook Shop, or are you still every day concerned about what it feels like to be a 11, 12-year-old restaurant in New York?
I think if I could sit back and stand on the street and look at that and smile, I would. It would never work. you live in, not really in constant terror, but I think you have to keep looking and evaluating and questioning, and that's part of everyday's approach. What came back? What were the problems? You're looking at staffing, at costs, at the way things are appealing to the customer. Yeah, I think it's not as though you live in terror necessarily, but you just, it's so important to be constantly evaluating things and being able to structure your team and the people that are involved in day-to-day work, responding to their input and constantly evaluating.
As someone who's been in the New York restaurant business for a very long time, there's quite a few changes afoot in the hospitality business. There's a large shift moving towards quick service,
right,
and being able to provide people with a $11 lunch option,
right,
things of that nature that are based more possibly on speed than quality, although quality can be high. All your restaurants are full service. They all are fully staffed with liquor and many seats. Cook Shop is gigantic. I know that. And your other restaurants are 80, 90 seats about?
Correct.
Can you tell me what your thoughts are on being a full service restaurant group as you see there being sort of a paradigm shift in some of the modeling? Is that something that you are looking to get involved in? Do you want to stay out of it? What are your thoughts on it?
Where do I start? I think, I don't bemoan the changes. It's not as though I'm saying, look at the times. This is terrible. Look at what's going on. That would be ridiculous. I think it's a fact, and I think you have to evaluate things from that perspective. I think for all the reasons, or the many reasons, these changes have to be embraced somehow or another. Otherwise, you can't. I think the full service restaurant, as you say, probably is going the way of the dinosaurs in some way or another. I mean, there will always be a place for it. I don't know what the price points are going to have to be to make it viable. But yes, we talk about it all the time as a group, and think about what we could do and how we could do something that evokes the type of approach that we're taking as cooks and chefs and restaurateurs, but being able to take the curve in the road in the way that things are changing. Is that...
We're here on the line with Mark Meyer. He's talking about several of his restaurants, Vic's Cook Shop, Rosie's. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about his early cooking career in New York City and on the West Coast. Stick with us here, Heritage Radio, The Line.
This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a national nonprofit network with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Chefs Collaborative members work to make sustainable practices second nature for every chef in the United States. Chefs Collaborative was founded in 1993 by visionary chefs including Rick Bayless and Alice Waters, who acknowledged the influential role of food professionals on our food choices, our collective personal health, the vitality of cultures, and the integrity of the global environment. Chefs Collaborative believes that the greater culinary community can be a catalyst for positive change by expanding the market for good food and helping to preserve local farming and fishing communities. Change menus, change lives. Learn more about Chefs Collaborative at chefscollaborative.org.
Welcome back to The Line. I'm here with chef and restaurateur Mark Meyer. He is the co-owner of Vic's Cook Shop, Rosie's in New York City and 100 Acres. Mark, I wanted to talk about your early life. There seems to be sort of two trajectories for people that become chefs. One is, I was a kid, I was in the kitchen always, I always knew, and then others seem to have gone to school for something else and then maybe fallen backwards into it. Do you fall into one of these sort of archetypal storylines at all?
Definitely. It was never anything that I considered as a child or growing up at all. The idea of being a chef or being involved in restaurants.
Did you have something, did you go to college for something else? Did you go to school and think you were going to be a architect, something like what did you pursue? And
yeah, I went to UC Berkeley for architecture.
Oh wow!
And then found myself in Alaska on a crab fishing boat, and at one point.
Let's not gloss over this and make that just a quick transition there. So you're at UC Berkeley and you end up in Alaska.
Yeah.
What brought you to Alaska?
I think just being immature and being a little bit crazy and angry and not knowing what to do or how to live my life. And
were you still in school or did you drop out of school?
I dropped out.
Yeah. And so you end up on a boat. How long are you in Alaska for?
I was there for about 8 months.
That's a dangerous job, right? Pretty intense being on a boat for long periods of time.
Right, it was. And when this frozen rain and sleet started falling parallel to the ocean, I thought that was time to leave. And that was an interesting place, Dutch Harbor in Unalaska.
Isolated,
yeah, and lots of alcoholics, and it just didn't really it didn't really suit me at a point.
So after you spend 8 months there, what's the next sort of adventure that you decided to tackle?
I tried going back to school, mm-hmm. and that didn't work, and got involved in just driving trucks and trying to survive. And
how does driving trucks lead you to working at the Odeon?
there's no relationship. These are tormented segments of an individual.
So you
trying to find something.
So your early adult life is sort of siloed in these in these moments where you're doing these very different activities.
Right, I would say that.
I want to try to figure out how do you end? Do you end up in a kitchen just for economic reasons? Was it a job?
Yeah, it was a job. I started working at coffee shops. Just doing prep work. I worked at a place called 5/9. At 1/5, which is where Batali has his pizza place down on 8th Street and 5th Avenue, and I met some of the people who became. Well, Keith McNally ran the dining room at that time, and that led to me going to the Odeon. Keith was the maitre d'.
So at what point did you think that you actually enjoyed cooking and it might be something that you may stay involved in from more than just a making money standpoint?
I think at 1/5 it sort of clicked.
And when you went over to the Odeon, what were you doing there? Were you a line cook?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I was a line cook, being screamed at for 10, 12 hours a day by Patrick Clark. And, you know, having things thrown at me and, you know, but it was really difficult. It was still at that period of time where you were berated and... But you saw what you were able to put on a plate because of somebody that was extremely talented and had incredible repertoire and had a range who, you know, just knew how to make great food.
When you were there and you were working on the line and you were sort of suffering through those 10 and 12 hour long days... Was there a moment where you said, I'm going to open up my own restaurant one day?
No, not at all.
How many years later do you think that you finally came? I know that you said when you opened up 5 Points, you didn't quite feel ready.
Right.
Was there ever a point when you were standing in a kitchen that you thought, I think I may be ready to do it? Was it always doubt? 100% doubt.
I think it was a lot of doubt. I think it was always about, well, what was the next step? What do I need to know? How much more do I need to know? Do I understand things well, technically? Do I have a range of skills? How do my abilities compare with other people? Have I developed that lexicon adequately? And so I felt really strongly that it was important to. I wanted to go to Italy, so that was my next step after Odeon.
And so, where did you go in Italy?
I went to Rome.
And did you work for an extended period of time at one restaurant in Rome? What was that experience like?
It was crazy and exhilarating, and it was a roller coaster ride, comparatively, in many different ways. I went with the idea of being able to work with someone through an arrangement, and that fell through, and I just found a pension, and literally at that time started answering want ads. And finally found a little place that was run by a wonderfully insane kind of man who was a Francophile. He was originally from Naples and had brass underliners and crocheted linen plate liners, and had the waiter, because it was so small, or the two waiters would come in and clean silverware and wash and shine crystal, but yet it was still very, very Italian. You know, we had to have pasta. We made sausage a couple times a week. We made galantine once a week. We would go to the market, he would come in white leather Johnny Versace suits and do crepes tableside, and it was just, you know, I had a room that only had a toilet, so I had to wash at the train station if I wanted a shower. But it was wonderful. It was liberating, you know. It was taking the bus every day, or walking to work, or going and having a little lunch before I went in, or working split shifts. It was incredible experience. But yes,
am I right to say that you enjoy pushing yourself in extreme situations where you're sometimes in solitude, that you enjoy spending time by yourself, just working sort of with an intense focus? Is that still a style of yours?
No, I don't. That's too romantic. I don't view. I'm just, you know, I kind of plod along and get these little moments of pleasure, I guess, out of it.
After your Italian externship, you returned to New York?
Right.
And where did you work next?
Where did I work? I worked at a place called Green Street with a chef named Larry Vito, who had been one of the sous chefs for Patrick Clark at Odeon.
And how did you make your way to the West Coast again? You spent some time in the West Coast cooking?
Right. From Green Street, boy, some things are not entirely clear. I met Larry Forgione, mm-hmm. and worked for him also for a while. And at that time, it was Larry on the East Coast and Alice Waters on the West Coast. As far as I should have brought in Larry when I mentioned Peter Hoffman, right? Because at that time we had people coming to the back door, literally with mushrooms and berries and fish, selling things.
Now activities that are so commonplace in the kitchen. Yeah, I know. Of course, I know who brings me my carrots. But
right.
Larry was really at the forefront of
Absolutely.
Having that one-on-one relationship with the actual purveyor, with the farmer, with your clam guy, right?
Clearly. Things coming from Brown Trading, right. Chickens that were uneviscerated, having to clean chickens that way, getting a trout butterflied. It was unheard of, so...
Animals came and they still looked like the animals
absolutely.
Had originally been.
Absolutely.
I want to jump back now to present day and ask about how you and if Vicky is involved in this process as well, about your hiring of leaders in the kitchen. I've had two guests on the show that are the chefs of Vic's and 100 Acres. And I'm curious about how you go about picking the people front of house as well to be the leaders of your restaurant. Obviously, you and Vicky cannot be everywhere at the same time, and you need to have people that not only can you trust, but that are willing to go through the process that you've outlined to make your restaurant stay what they are. How do you achieve those goals?
Well, one thing I wanted to mention is that there's a third partner who never is talked about. His name is Chris Periscovides. Mm-hmm. And Chris worked for Steve Hansen, was a director of operations for Steve Hansen for 13 years. And he handles all the things that Vicky and I don't get involved in. Mm-hmm. And he has an incredible feel for the restaurant business and understands it deeply. He's more involved in insurance issues and real estate and all the technical stuff that, you know, we would be lost in if we had to do. So he's also very instrumental in hiring and how we're structuring things and how the selection of key people.
And so for you and Vicky, is there something that you specifically, is there something that you look for? Do you just know it when you see it? How do you hire for four separate restaurants?
Yeah, I think if to have that sense of knowing which people are best, I don't necessarily have. I think Chris and Vicky probably have a better idea of that. I think it's trying to find people who understand hospitality, who understand how to be gracious, who understand the importance of making people feel welcomed, the value of and the importance of making sure anybody who walks in there, everybody who walks into those restaurants wants to come again. And then it's finding people who can make decisions, who are adults, who have a mature approach to engaging people and relating to people, and who can work with the back of the house and understand the range of individuals who work in restaurants, from a dishwasher to a very sophisticated, world-traveled guest. So these are things that you can't teach in culinary school or in management school or anything else. It just takes someone who wants to do this. And finding them, I think in many cases now more than ever, it's a needle in a haystack.
Did I read that you have kids that are in the business, that they work at your restaurants?
Yes, yes.
When they decided that they wanted to do that, proud moment, moment of dread?
It was less a proud moment and more a moment of dread, because it seemed to just happen. What I tell people is that if they couldn't do the job, they wouldn't be working for us. Mm-hmm. That's one thing.
Do they cook? What are they
one,
doing?
One cooks and one is an assistant manager. And they both do, I think, a great job. And they're learning. They're learning.
Is there a part of you that was hoping that they wouldn't get involved in the business and just stay as far away as possible?
Yes. Truthfully, yes. I'm proud of it. I'm proud to see that they're capable, but we'll see where it goes. The one who works in the front of a house is I don't know where he got this skill, because he's engaging, he's warm, he's a smart young man. He enjoys himself. He enjoys being around people. He knows how to talk to people, and we'll see where it goes.
I'll get you out of here on this last question. Your entire family is in the business
right.
together.
Right.
You spend all of your life in your restaurants, and you've got quite a few now. I'm curious, is retirement ever a thing that you've considered?
Absolutely not. Not by a stretch. There's other projects I want to do. As you mentioned, the restaurant business is going because of all the I don't look at it as constraints. I look at it as a different way to go, and I want to be a part of it. I definitely want to be a part of the changing nature of the business, and yet still use the ethos of responsibility and how to source, how to purchase, how to deal with people, how to hire people as part of it. But I want to keep going.
Mark, we're looking forward to your next project. Thank you for joining me here.
Thank you. It was great.
Everybody, please join us next week, Tuesdays, 11 a.m., Heritage Radio.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.